The Contra Podcast conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today, we're trying to cut through some of the noise, around what's probably the biggest challenge of our time.
Yeah.
Climate change.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we want to move past the sort of simple explanations and really tackle the full complexity. The science, sure, but also the social side, the politics.
And for that, we're diving into the work of Professor Mark Maslin. We're looking at his Climate Change, a comprehensive scientific and social overview, and also his very short introduction.
Okay.
And his work is great because, well, he doesn't just treat climate change as one single thing. It's systemic. You know, it touches almost every part of how we live.
Right. So our goal here is really to equip you, the listener, with knowledge that's both deep but also actionable.
Mm-hmm.
We all kind of know about the greenhouse effect, maybe.
Mm-hmm. But Maslin makes us ask the harder questions, like why is there still so much political inertia when the basic science has been solid for, well, decades?
And it matters right now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This isn't some far-off future threat anymore.
No, definitely not. It's here. It's shaping global security, even things like your local insurance rates. It's an active variable.
So to guide us through this, we're really leaning on Maslin's authority. He's professor of Earth System Science at University College London, UCL. And I mean, he's a very highly cited researcher. His work's invaluable because he really merges the hard physics with the human side of things.
And what I find really fascinating about his background is his specialty, paleoclimatology.
Right, the study of past climates.
Yeah. So he's not just looking at temperature records from, say, the last 100 years. He's digging into Earth's deep geological history. Millions of years.
And that perspective is just so crucial, isn't it?
It really is, because it lets him say definitively, look, the speed and the scale of the changes happening now, the human-caused ones, there's just no precedent for it in the Earth's natural cycles.
Exactly. He sees the whole sweep of time. And his real strength is translating this rigorous, sometimes pretty dense scientific data, the physics of carbon cycles, into language we can all grasp.
And connecting it.
Yes, connecting it directly to, well, politics, economics, social justice. That's why his work is so useful. It gives you the solid evidence you need to kind of push back against the oversimplifications you hear all the time.
Okay, so let's get into the core argument then, the premise that runs through both books. He starts from a really clear position, right?
Absolutely unambiguous. Climate change is real. It's scientifically undeniable. And it's driven primarily by human activity, especially since the Industrial Revolution kicked off.
And flowing from that, the key insight seems to be we can't just treat this as an environmental problem, like saving the whales or something.
Exactly. That's far too narrow. Maslin argues it's this really multifaceted challenge, like a global stress test almost. It cuts across our economic structures, our political systems, all those existing social inequalities.
It interacts with everything.
Right. If you only focus on, say, planting trees, you miss the bigger picture, which is the whole system.
So the book takes you on this journey, starting with the basic science.
Yeah, the fundamentals, greenhouse effect,
energy
balance, that kind of thing.
Then it moves into what we're actually seeing, the observed impacts, and what's projected for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then crucially, it delves into the human dimensions, things like climate justice, which often get overlooked. And finally, it wraps up with solutions, policy, adaptation.
It's a really complete picture, and it feels like it's designed for, you know, anyone who needs that solid, authoritative grounding, informed citizens, policymakers, students maybe.
Yeah.
Maslin really pushes past the easy talking points. He wants you to grasp the complexity, the trade-offs involved in actually trying to solve this thing.
Okay, let's dig into some specifics then, starting with that foundational science. Chapter one, chapter two kind of territory.
Right.
We know the difference between weather, what's happening outside right now, and climate, the long-term average, and the greenhouse effect. That's natural, right? We need it. It's like a planetary blanket.
Absolutely necessary for life as we know it. But
Maslin uses that basic idea to explain why the speed of change now is the alarming part. We're thickening that blanket way too fast.
And a really key point he makes, which might surprise some people, is that the fundamental physics isn't actually new.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he traces it way back. Joseph Fourier in the 1820s first proposed this idea of the atmosphere trapping heat.
The 1820s? Wow.
I know. And then Svante Arrhenius, a Swedish scientist, In 1896, he was the first person to actually calculate how much the Earth might warm if CO2 levels doubled.
So they knew the basics over a century ago.
The groundwork was there, yeah.
Yeah.
Long before it became, you know, a political football.
And how does the Keeling curve fit into this, that famous graph?
Ah, yes. Charles David Keeling's measurements from Mauna Loa in Hawaii started in the 1950s.
Right, showing CO2 going up and up.
Maslin presents it as, well, the undeniable visual proof of what Arrhenius predicted decades earlier. That constantly rising line, that's the smoking gun linking our industrial activity directly to the changing atmosphere. It's incredibly powerful evidence.
Okay, so we're pumping more CO2 up there, the blanket gets thicker.
Mm.
How does the Earth system react? You mentioned feedback loops earlier.
Right, feedback loops. These are crucial. They're cycles within the climate system that can either amplify an initial change or sometimes dampen it.
Amplify sounds bad.
Often, yeah. The classic example is the ice albedo feedback. So warming happens, ice melts. Ice is really reflective, bounces sunlight back into space.
Okay.
But when it melts, it reveals darker ocean or land underneath. Dark surfaces absorb more heat.
Which leads to more warming.
Which leads to more melting. It's a reinforcing cycle, a vicious circle, as you said earlier.
And is that kind of thing why the difference between, say, 1.5 degrees Celsius warming and 2 degrees is talked about so much? Because these loops might kick in more strongly.
That's a big part of it, yes.
Yeah.
They represent potential tipping points. Once these feedbacks really get going, it becomes much, much harder for us to stabilize the climate, even if we cut emissions drastically.
Okay, so it shrinks our window for effective action.
Radically, yeah.
Yeah.
And Maslin stresses that rising temperatures and melting ice, they're only part of the picture. He highlights ocean acidification, too. Calls it the other CO2 problem.
Right, that's where the oceans soak up a load of the CO2 we emit.
Exactly, about 30% or so. Which, you know, actually slows down the warming of the atmosphere a bit, which sounds good.
Got it.
But it changes the ocean's chemistry. All that dissolved CO2 makes the water more acidic. And that's really bad news for marine life that builds shells or skeletons out of calcium carbonate corals, plankton, shellfish.
So we're damaging the base of the marine food web.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
This huge collateral damage happening silently beneath the waves.
So with all this complexity, the feedbacks, the ocean chemistry, how do scientists actually predict what might happen next? How reliable are those climate models we hear about?
That's a good question. Maslin is very clear. Global climate models, GCMs, aren't crystal balls. They're incredibly sophisticated computer simulations based on the fundamental laws of physics and chemistry.
Right.
What they do is run different scenarios or pathways. These are basically plausible stories about how the world might develop in the future, different levels of emissions, population growth, technology use, etc.
Okay, so they test different what-ifs.
Exactly. And based on those what-ifs, the models project ranges of possible climate outcomes. The key takeaway isn't about predicting the weather in London on a specific day in 2050.
No, of course not.
It's that across all these different plausible scenarios, the models consistently show significant warming is baked in. The overall direction and magnitude are very well established, even if the precise regional details, like exactly how much rainfall changes somewhere, still have some uncertainty.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's pivot then to the human side of things. Maslin really hammers home this idea of climate justice, doesn't he?
He absolutely does. He frames it fundamentally as an issue of fairness.
How so?
Well, he points out the stark reality that the countries and communities suffering the worst impacts, think of small island developing states like Tuvalu, facing literal extinction from sea level rise.
Yeah.
These are often the places that contributed the very least, historically, to the greenhouse gas emissions causing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's a massive disconnect between responsibility and vulnerability.
That's a powerful point. And how does this interact with existing inequalities within countries?
That's where it gets even more complex. Maslin uses examples like Hurricane Katrina in the U.S. to illustrate this. The hurricane itself was a climate-linked event, yes, but its devastating impact was massively amplified by pre-existing racial and economic divides in New Orleans.
So the storm didn't hit everyone equally?
Not even close. Poorer communities, often communities of color, lacked resources, lived in more vulnerable areas, had less insurance, faced slower government responses. The climate event acted as a threat multiplier.
A threat multiplier. I like that term. It takes existing problems, poverty, hunger, insecurity, and makes them worse.
Precisely. It shows how climate change isn't happening in a vacuum. It lands right on top of existing social fractures and deepens them. It turns a weather event into a long-term social crisis.
Okay, so given this complex picture, the science, the impacts, the justice issues, what does Maslin say about solutions? Where do we go from here?
Right, he talks about two main strategies which need to work together: mitigation and adaptation.
Okay, mitigation first. What's that involve?
Mitigation is all about reducing greenhouse gas emissions at the source. So think rapid transition to renewable energy, solar, wind, massive improvements in energy efficiency, maybe putting a price on carbon.
The stuff we generally hear about.
Yes. And Maslin is quite emphatic here. The technical solutions for mitigation largely exist. We have the technology.
So what's the holdup?
Political will, economic inertia, social resistance to change. That's the main barrier he identifies for mitigation.
Okay, and the other strategy, adaptation.
Adaptation is about adjusting to the climate change impacts that are already happening or are now unavoidable, even with mitigation.
So dealing with the consequences.
Exactly. Building seawalls to protect coastal cities, developing drought-resistant crops for farmers, improving early warning systems for extreme weather events, preparing ourselves.
Right. So if the technical solutions for mitigation exist and they're getting cheaper, why is that political will still so hard to muster? Is it just lobbying, or is it genuinely that hard to shift entire economies?
It's probably a mix of both, I think. The lobbying power of fossil fuel interests is undeniable, historically. But also, yes, the sheer inertia in our energy systems, our infrastructure, our consumption habits, it's enormous.
Yeah.
We've seen the global political approach evolve, haven't we? From the Kyoto Protocol, which was more top-down and ultimately didn't work that well because key players didn't fully participate, to the 2015 Paris Agreement. Paris is different. It's more bottom-up. Countries set their own targets, called Nationally Determined Contributions, or NDCs.
That sounds more flexible. Did it work better?
Well, it got almost every country on board, which was a huge diplomatic achievement. But it also created that tension Maslin highlights. The NDCs collectively still aren't enough to meet the 1.5 or 2 degree goals. And there's that fairness issue again. Developing nations need support for adaptation now, but the focus is often still on getting them to promise future mitigation.
Okay, let's try and pull together the big themes then, the core messages that Maslin really wants us to take away from all this.
Sounds good. I think the first one has to be scientific certainty amid complexity.
Meaning?
Meaning, despite the complexities of feedback loops or regional projections, the fundamental reality that humans are causing significant warming is backed by overwhelming scientific consensus. That certainty gives us a really solid foundation for taking action. We don't need to wait for every single detail to be nailed down.
Right. Don't let the uncertainties paralyze us.
Okay, what's next?
Second, definitely climate change as a social justice issue. This is central to Maslin's analysis. Effective climate action has to address those underlying global inequalities we talked about.
Mm.
Ideas like climate debt, historical responsibility, they need to be part of the policy discussion.
So it's not just about emissions. It's about fairness and development, too.
Absolutely. Third theme, the urgency of transformation.
Yeah.
Maslin is really clear, tinkering around the edges, small incremental changes. There's not going to cut it.
Not enough.
No. We need rapid, deep, fundamental changes in how we produce energy, how we grow food, how our economies work. And this needs to happen within decades, not centuries. The speed of the environmental change demands we overcome our systemic inertia much faster.
A huge challenge.
It is. And that leads to the fourth theme, which is maybe a bit more hopeful. Solutions exist, but require political will.
Ah, yes. You mentioned the tech is there.
Exactly. The technologies for a cleaner future are largely available, often cost-effective. So the biggest hurdles aren't technical. They're political, social, economic. Climate change is, at its heart, a massive governance challenge. It requires democratic engagement, international cooperation, and overcoming vested interests.
Maslin really does have a way of framing these big ideas memorably, doesn't he? Some of his lines really stick with you.
He does, like that core idea. Climate change is not just an environmental issue. It is a development issue, a security issue, and ultimately a social justice issue.
That just forces you to think bigger, doesn't it? It demands that holistic response we talked about. You can't just focus on solar panels. You have to think about poverty reduction at the same time.
Precisely. Or another one he emphasizes, every fraction of a degree matters.
The difference between 1.5 degrees C and 2 degrees C of warming could mean the survival or disappearance of entire island nations.
Yeah, that puts the abstract numbers into stark human terms. It really raises the stakes of those international negotiations, makes them feel incredibly personal for millions of people.
It does. And then there's the link between the two main strategies. Adaptation without mitigation is futile. Mitigation without adaptation is negligent.
Ah, I like that. It cuts through the debate about which is more important.
Exactly. It says you absolutely have to do both. Trying to only adapt to a continually worsening problem is pointless, but only focusing on cutting emissions while ignoring the impacts already hitting people is irresponsible. Well, they have to go hand in hand.
And one more key idea that really underpins his whole argument.
I think it's this. The solutions to climate change are not just technical. They require us to reimagine how we organize our societies and economies.
So it's not just about inventing a new gadget.
No, it's deeper than that. It requires systemic change, rethinking fundamental assumptions about growth, consumption, equity. It's a call for transformation, not just transition.
Okay, so this is a lot to take in. How can we, you know, apply this knowledge in our own lives? What are the real-world applications for you, the listener?
Well, first, Maslin's analysis gives you a solid framework for informed consumption. You can actually use it to evaluate your personal carbon footprint more intelligently.
How so?
By understanding where the biggest impacts lie. He provides the context to prioritize changes, maybe focusing more on transportation or home energy use, or understanding the very different carbon intensities of foods, like red meat compared to plant-based options.
Right, making smarter choices based on real data, not just guesswork. What else?
On a professional strategy level, this knowledge is becoming essential. If you work in finance, you need to understand climate risk and investments. If you're in urban planning, you have to design for resilience. Supply chains need to factor in climate disruption.
And the flip side.
And the flip side, yeah. The book makes it clear that the transition to clean energy isn't just a cost. It's probably the biggest economic and innovation opportunity of the 21st century. There are huge business possibilities there.
Okay, and finally, maybe the most important application.
Political participation. Honestly, understanding Maslin's work gives you the tools to cut through the political spin. You can evaluate candidate climate policies more critically. You can understand what things like the Paris Agreement NDCs actually mean or don't mean. It empowers you to engage in informed voting and advocacy, whether locally or nationally.
So it helps you be a more effective citizen on this issue.
Definitely.
Thinking back on everything we've discussed, what was the most surprising thing for you, perhaps?
For me, it was definitely that deep historical context, realizing that scientists like Fourier were theorizing about the atmospheric heat trap back in the 1820s. That just blew my mind a bit.
Yeah.
It really grounds the current science in almost two centuries of discovery. It shows that the basic understanding isn't some recent fad. It's built on a long, solid foundation, making the conclusions about human impact feel even more inescapable, regardless of recent political debates.
That's a great point. And for you, what's the most valuable lesson you took away?
I think for me, it's the idea that clarity is the antidote to the kind of confusion and paralysis that often surround climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Maslin's work cuts through the noise.
Yeah.
He shows that, yes, the challenge is enormous scientifically and politically, but crucially, the solutions, at least technically, are largely within our grasp. He really forces that essential paradigm shift, seeing climate change not as some distant, abstract environmental problem, but as the immediate defining social, economic, and ethical challenge of our generation. It's about us right now. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.